Welcome to another episode of Behind the Evidence AODH, a podcast supported by the Graykin Center for Addiction at Boston Medical Center. I'm one of our co-hosts, Mark LaRochelle, an addiction-focused primary care physician at Boston Medical Center.
And I'm Honora Englander, an addiction medicine physician and health services researcher at Oregon Health and Science University. On Behind the Evidence, we seek to engage with recent practice-relevant literature related to substance use. The podcast draws from articles reviewed in the AODH newsletter and aims to understand what's behind the evidence through conversations, including with authors.
Excellent. Well, let's jump into today's episode.
Welcome, everyone. We are delighted to be here today with Professor Marie Geoffrey-Rustide from Paris, France, who will be speaking with us today about her paper published in Addiction last year in 2023, entitled Drug Consumption Rooms Are Effective to Reduce At-Risk Practices Associated with HIV-HCV Infections Among People Who Inject Drugs, Results from the COSINUS Cohort Study. I am particularly honored to be here with Marie, as she's been a friend, colleague, and mentor in my recent experiences in Lyon and Paris, France. So Marie, thanks so much for joining us today. To begin, can you introduce yourself to the audience?
Yes, thank you so much, Honora, for inviting me today. So I'm a sociologist and also a public health researcher. I am a research fellow at the French National Institute of Health and Medical Research. And I'm leading research on harm reduction since 30 years now.
Wonderful. We're so glad to have you. To begin, we'd like you just to speak a little bit about why you did this study and how you framed it.
So the story is a bit long, so I will try to be short. So first of all, the idea of this study began in 2010. So in 2010, we were a group of scientists working at my research organization. We were working on HCV because the Ministry of Health considered that France has a very high level of HCV compared to our European neighbor. So, for example, at this period of time, we have 2/3 of people who inject drugs were HCV infected. And we had also at this period of time a very high level of HCV incidence. Between 10 and 20% of people who inject drugs had HCV incidence was around between 10 and 20% among people who inject drugs. And in the Netherlands and in Switzerland, that are two neighbors, they have a quite null HCV incidence. So we were quite surprised by this huge difference between France and other European countries. And as you know, Honora, being in France now, in France, we have quite a good harm reduction model. Because we have a very high accessibility to opioid substitutive treatment. But there was one major harm reduction tool that was missing in France called drug consumption rooms. And the difference, the main difference between Switzerland, Netherlands, and France was that in Switzerland, they implemented the first drug consumption room in 1986. And in the Netherlands, they have also a lot of drug consumption rooms. These two countries were very innovative with the drug consumption rooms. So it was in 2010. So we were wondering how we can improve the harm reduction model. And by looking at these epidemiological differences between countries, we thought by also reading the literature that it might be very important to experiment drug consumption rooms in France. So my after having gathered this group of INSERM experts, we recommended to the French Ministry of Health the experiment of drug consumption rooms. The French Ministry of Health at this period of time accepted to make the implementation, but unfortunately, the prime minister, who was quite conservative, decided to give up. So we need to wait for having new election with a less conservative government. This less conservative government decided to implement the drug consumption rooms. So they made an announcement in 2013, and they asked my research organization to evaluate drug consumption rooms because they wanted to have an experiment based on scientific evidence. So they asked INSERM, an external research institution that has no link with the government, to make the evaluation. And it began like that. So that was a political request to a scientific research organization to make this evaluation. And I was nominated for being the principal investigator of this evaluation for Paris. And I worked with three other colleagues, Marc Auriacombe in Bordeaux, Perrine Roux in Marseille, and Laurence Lalanne in Strasbourg. We made a design of the cohort survey called Cosinus. And after that, we were ready to begin in 2016, because before the announcement of opening the drug consumption rooms by the government, and the time it was possible to do that in the law, because we have a prohibitive regime, so it was quite complicated to reconcile a prohibitive regime towards drug use and the possibility to implement drug consumption rooms. It takes several years. And in 2016, two drug consumption rooms were settled, one in Paris and another in Strasbourg. And we decided to begin the Cosinus cohort. But additionally to the Cosinus cohort, I can talk about that just after. We also implemented a sociological cohort, a sociological survey, among the social acceptability of drug consumption rooms among residents and political actors, medical doctors. And we also made a research study, another sociological research study on the impact of drug consumption room on public safety. So that means that Cosinus cohort is one part of a big evaluation that was a multidisciplinary approach. And it was very important for France to have this big multidisciplinary approach, because the political resistance was very important. As I just said, we have Switzerland that is very close to France, who decided to implement it with success, drug consumption room in 1986, and France waited for 30 years to implement their first drug consumption room. So it was very important to have a very solid, robust, and multidisciplinary approach. So I was a bit long, sorry.
Thank you so much, Dr. Geoffrey Roustide. It's a fascinating story. I'm really curious if you could tell us about how you came to the study design. The controlled cohort design seems fairly unique in this space and is different than other evaluations I've seen of drug consumption rooms, and it seems like a really interesting approach when randomization may be difficult. And so I was wondering if you could tell us more about how you came to that approach and what you actually did.
So we came to this study design by working during several months. So during several months, we discussed with harm reduction providers who both manage the two drug consumption rooms, and also with harm reduction providers, to be sure that we will have a design study that don't disturb too much the ongoing work of harm reduction provider, because we knew that we will that we have money to do the survey for 2 years, 1 year for recruiting people and 1 year for following people. So that was very short time for the follow-up. I will briefly speak about that also after, because it has an impact also on the result. So we discussed during several months, and we discussed a lot with Thomas Kerr, who is the PI for the evaluation of Insight in Vancouver. So very nicely, he sent us the questionnaire that they used. And one of the main important things in France is this reluctance, this political reluctance, and this political hesitation towards drug consumption rooms. So it was very important for us compared to other European countries where there was less reluctance to implement drug consumption rooms, to be sure that we will have a control group. And it was very difficult to make a randomization for also ethical reasons, because we wanted to be sure that all people who live in a city where there is a drug consumption room will have access to the drug consumption room. It was not possible for us to say we are in a city where there is a drug consumption room, and we will ask some people not to attend the drug consumption room. So that's why we decided to have these two cities, Paris and Strasbourg, where the two drug consumption rooms were implemented. And scientifically, by chance, not politically, but scientifically, we also had at the same time two big cities with new drug consumption rooms, Marseille and Bordeaux, with scientific teams that can work with us. And that's why we decided to do this comparison of two groups. But as we were not able to do this randomization, and as there was a very strong request for our government that they will disseminated drug consumption rooms in France only if we have a robust design, and they told to us that it was very important for them for taking the dissemination for this decision for dissemination to have results that that shows that drug consumption rooms are successful. So we wanted to be sure that we will not miss a step, that we will the design will be robust to be sure that it will be not political based but evidence based. So that was super important for us to find a way to overcome this lack of randomization. And that's why we use this Ekman model that was a statistical tool that helped us to overcome the fact that we have no randomization. Because the two groups, people who have access to drug consumption room and people who have no access to drug consumption room, were groups that have similarities but also differences. We know that people who attend drug consumption room are more at risk, especially for acquiring HCV or HIV. So the design, having the perfect design, even if we can improve design, but it was quite a perfect design, was something very, very important for us. And we have 3 years for preparing the survey. So in practice, we decided also to recruit 665 participants for the global survey, because we expect to have an attrition rate around 40%, and that was what we had. And that's why we recruited 665 participants, and we have 1 year of recruitment, and after that we followed people at 3 months, 6 months, and 1 year. And unfortunately, we didn't have enough money to go over 1 year. And that's why we have some results that were very impressive, especially regarding HIV and HCV exposure, but some other results, especially regarding access to care, take more time to achieve. So that was mainly the design. I don't know if you have other question about the design or.
So the drug consumption rooms were in, I think you said, Paris and Strasbourg, and then where was the recruitment from in the control, and from the control group was from the other two cities. Could you tell us where people were recruited from in the other?
Yes, for the control group, people were recruited in Marseille, in the south of France, in the southeast of France, and in Bordeaux, in the southwest of France.
And so what setting were they recruited from, though? It sounded like...
For missing that. People were recruiting in harm reduction facilities.
Okay. And what do those look like? Is that like... For a lot of our audience, we have syringe service programs here, needle exchange, and other harm reduction services being provided.
Yeah. Okay. That was the same. So needle exchange program and programs where people can access to opioid substitutive treatment, but not very medicalized facilities. So that's why there were a lot of similarities between the two groups. People who attend drug consumption rooms and people who attend harm reduction facilities. Because drug consumption rooms are also part of harm reduction policy. But there were also some geographical differences, but mainly regarding the substance that were used. And for example, in Paris, in the Parisian drug consumption rooms, a lot of people inject morphine sulfates, and that was a specificity of Paris.
And Marie, correct me if anything that I say isn't right, but it may be useful for our listeners to understand that in France there's a regional approach throughout a national approach that's then implemented at the regional level, to where there are harm reduction centers or CARUDs that exist throughout the country, and they offer a range of services, including social services, syringe exchange or syringe distribution, safer use supplies, etc. And that I think very appropriately, the team here assumed that that people that utilize CARUDs would be the same people who would potentially utilize drug consumption rooms were there a drug consumption room in the cities where there were not.
Yes, that's the same in France. So one of the specificity of France, if we compare to the US, is that we have a national harm reduction policy. So that means that the French government since the 90s has decided that harm reduction needs to be implemented. So we have a lot of harm reduction facilities all over the countries and all these facilities get public funded. They are sustainable public funded. So that means that we have not a lot of regional differences regarding drug policy in France, if we compare to the United States or North America in general. But what we know, even if we have this harm reduction, sustainable harm reduction policy, what we know is that people who use drug consumption rooms are more vulnerable, because that's people who use drug consumption rooms mainly use this facility because they have no safe space to inject. So that means that the majority of people who attend drug consumption room have no stable housing.
So Marie, that's really interesting. And could you now tell us what the main results and takeaways from the study were?
Yes, of course. So for the addiction paper, the main outcome that we want to study what the effect of drug consumption rooms on HIV and HCV exposure. So the variables that we study, that was our outcome, what the injecting equipment sharing. So we were interesting to study if having access to a drug consumption room will have or not an effect on HIV and HCV practices. And what we discovered is that in the group of people who have access to drug consumption room, HIV and HCV risk practices was for having sharing injecting equipment was 1% in the last months. And when we compare it to the control group, people who have no access to drug consumption room in this second group, the sharing of injecting equipment was 11%. So having access to a drug consumption room introduce a very important decrease in being exposed to HIV and HCV exposure. So that was the main result of our analysis for addiction. But in other paper, we also studied other outcomes such as the impact of having access to a drug consumption room to overdose prevention. And we also showed that having access to a drug consumption room had a positive impact on overdose prevention. So that's, but in the paper that we published in addiction, we studied also two other outcomes, having access to opioid substitutive treatment and also having access to HCV testing. And for these two outcomes, it was it was also very interesting to see that we have no effect on drug consumption room. But that doesn't mean that it was a negative result. That's, but it is very important for interpreting these two results on HCV testing and on opioid substitutive treatment access. It is important to recontextualize the French situation. So in France, the access to opioid substitutive treatment is 87%. So that means that 87% of people who have an opioid disorder have access to an opioid substitutive treatment. So when you have a so high availability of opioid substitutive treatment, that's very difficult to show an effect of drug consumption rooms access or another tool. So that's why, yes, that was very important to recontextualize this result. And that's the same for HCV testing. We have 95% of people who inject drugs in France who have had an HCV, who have been tested for HCV. So that's the same. That was super difficult to in 1 year to show an effect on an external harm reduction tool for improving these. improving this access that is very high. So that's why when you do such a survey, that's very important to have also in mind what is the drug policy, what is harm reduction policy implemented, and what we hope in the future is that for the continuation of these evaluations that we will do with another survey, we will have more time for the follow-up because regarding care, access to care, for example, it's very difficult for a population that lives in very precarious condition to have access to care in a very short time.
Great. And one thing I want to point out for our listeners, you mentioned that for the injection equipment sharing result, it was estimated to be 1% for those exposed to the drug consumption rooms and 11% for the control group. And when I look in the table one, the baseline rate was about 17% for those that were exposed to drug consumption rooms and 18% for those unexposed. So very similar at baseline, even though there were other differences that you controlled for. That's a tremendous improvement in injection equipment sharing, going from 17% down to 1% versus 18% to 11% for the control group.
Yes, we were very impressed by this result. And that was also the case for other outcome. We have a very important decrease for injecting in public spaces. So we have also an improvement for people who have an access to drug consumption rooms. They inject less in public spaces. So that means that the Cosinus cohort showed that drug consumption room allow to have effect on public health, so for people who inject drugs, but also for public safety, so for the environment, the social environment, also for residents. And these two results, having public health and also public safety results, were very important for the French government because they wanted to be sure that there will be no nuisance for residents with the implementation of drug consumption rooms. So having positive public safety result was also something very important.
Is your sense that people were less likely to share equipment, certainly while they were actively utilizing the drug consumption rooms, but also outside of their use outside of the drug consumption rooms? Can you speak to that, sort of the setting of use and whether or not use practices sort of carried over to other spaces?
No, that's a very important question because we framed the question in general. So we didn't ask people, did you use sterile syringes in the drug consumption room? That was in general. So we asked people in general. So that means what they do in general. So that means that people who attend drug consumption rooms and who continue, for example, to inject in their apartment or in the place where they live, even if it's a non-stable apartment or a community housing, in these settings, we can make the hypothesis that in these settings, they also decrease the sharing of injecting equipment. And because we know there are also other surveys that show the same, that when you are sensitized to the fact that that when you increase your level of knowledge about the fact that sharing injecting equipment is a way to be contaminated by HIV or HCV, and when you also increase the access to sterile and equipment material, people will decrease their practice of sharing. But there is also something that is very important, and we showed that more in qualitative surveys, is that when people People who have access to drug consumption rooms are people who are very stigmatized and people who have this feeling of being excluded for the society. And in the qualitative part of the survey that I did with some colleagues in Paris, people who attend a drug consumption room say to us that they feel very stigmatized and before attending drug consumption room. And when they attend drug consumption room, they felt being very respected by harm reduction professionals. And this feeling of being respected is also a way to improve the self-confidence of people. They think when they are respected, they think that their lives are important. And when people are excluded from care and from drug consumption rooms, they felt that their lives are not important. So we know by qualitative surveys that respecting people by giving them the care that they need, and in this case, it is having a safe space to inject in a drug consumption rooms, is also a way to help people to protect themselves and to protect the other. And that's not a result that was showed by the cosinus cohort, but a result that was showed by qualitative survey. And that's why I think that we can say that this level of improvement with the decreasing of injecting equipment can work in all settings, not only when they are in drug consumption rooms.
Perhaps you could talk about sort of your sense of the most important implications for this study, and that could be for clinicians, it could also be for policymakers or other actors.
So that's a very important but very difficult question. So there are several implications. So the first implication were in the scientific area. So we were very proud with our team to succeed to implement this cohort survey and to have a low rate of attrition. So that was very important for us. We have a very good team of research assistants who made very great work by trying to follow as well as they can people in the cohort. The second implication that is also related to science, but also with politics, but more with science, is that the trust, we have a very trustful relationship, I think, with harm reduction providers. And we respect their work and they respect our work. And we take the time to explain what we do. We take the time to discuss with, to present the result to them. So I decided, for example, with my team, and that was the same with the other co-PI, that before making presentation at conferences, we will present the results to the harm reduction providers and to people with lived experience. And that was something very important because these results are also important for them to see that their daily work as a harm reduction providers worked. So yes, this trustful relationship with people who lived in drug consumption room and harm reduction facility was also a key of the success of the survey. The other implication was that we were very proud to publish in such high journals, and we have a lot of close connection with the other teams that want to evaluate drug consumption room in their own countries. And the work that we did has also influenced new cohort survey, and I was very, 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 very proud of that. And we had also political implication with the survey. because the French government was expecting the results to take a decision. So we made a report by showing all the positive results on overdose prevention, on at-risk practices, and also on injecting in public space. But we also showed the limitations on OAT, for example, and on HCV testing. And the French government decided that with this result, they will continue the experiment. So that was a very good implication for us. So I have the feeling that the work that I do with my colleague is important not only for myself and for my career and for the career of my colleagues, but also for the community. And yes, that's something very, very, very important to me, to myself, to see that science can also have an impact on the daily life of vulnerable people, such as people who attend drug consumption rooms, because with the work of harm reduction providers, the excellent work of harm reduction providers, and with the work of our excellent team in science, that this collaboration, these both aspects were a way to secure an efficient harm reduction tool for people who inject drugs. So that was a very important implication for me to see that our work is also useful for the community. But I also have a regret. So I was a bit disappointed because the French government decided to continue with the two drug consumption rooms, but unfortunately for political resistance at local level, there are other cities such as Lille, for example, in the north of France, that is a city with a very high level of public injecting in public space, and they implemented a drug consumption room. Everything was ready. It was some months after we delivered the result of our evaluation, and the Ministry of Interior, they refused the implementation in Lille for political reasons. So I was a bit disappointed that it was not possible, despite the good results that we have with the evaluation, to disseminate drug consumption rooms all over the country. So we hope that with the new evaluation that we will do with my colleague Laurence Lalanne, my colleague Pierre-Éric Lutz, and my colleague Benjamin Roland in Lyon, and Laurence and Pierre-Éric are in Strasbourg, and I am in Paris, we will begin a new cohort called BIBOP with new indicators for the 3 next years. And we hope that with this new cohort, it will also help to have new results that will inform our government with new evidence.
Marie, thank you so much for your reflections. You know, one of the things that we were particularly interested in exploring with you as a guest on the podcast was your experiences incorporating really diverse voices and diverse perspectives in your research. And separately, you and I have talked a lot about that. I'm curious, as you think about the next steps of this work and the future directions, how you'll approach that, and particularly related to incorporating voices of people with lived experience.
So thank you for this question, Honora. That's a very important question for me. As I said at the beginning of the podcast, I'm old, and I'm doing research in harm reduction and drug policy since 30 years now. So I began in the 90s. And since the beginning, I did participatory-based research. So at this time, at the beginning of the 90s, I didn't know that I did research in this way, that it was called participatory based research, but it was very important for me to involve people with lived experience, because if we want my research, the aim of the research that I do at INSERM is to better inform drug policies and to better inform the French government to have to fill the needs of people who use drugs. So if you want to ask the good research questions, that's super important for me before implementing a research program to ask good question. And that's why very, very often, that's why since 25 years now, I began a companionship. I don't know if it's a good word in English, but a companionship with several people, especially Jean-Maxence Granier and Fabrice Olivier, who are the leader of the French drug user activist groups in France called ASUD. So this group appeared in France in the 90s, and they had a very important role in designing harm reduction policies in France. So since 25 years, I worked very closely with them, and this close relationship helped me to ask the question in my research that feel the most the needs of people with lived experience. For example, I will give you a very brief example. So in France, in the harm reduction field, for example, there are a lot of debate about what is the place of recovery in harm reduction. And and I know that recovery is a word in the US that is very close to abstinence. So that this is in the American context a very sensitive word. That's totally different in France. We speak not so much about recovery, and in the harm addiction field and in the political field, very often you have people who opposed reaching abstinence, for example, and harm reduction. And by discussing with people with lived experience, such as Fabrice and Jean-Maxence, but also a lot of people that I met during my field work since 30 years, it appeared to me that recovery might be a part an entire part of harm addiction when it is chosen by people. And in France, until now, we have a lot of harm addiction centers who provide access to syringes, access to opioid substitutive treatment, but sometimes they don't speak about recovery because they think that recovery means abstinence, and that it might be interpreted as in opposition with harm addiction. And by putting the voices in my research of people with lived experience who are able to have a recovery embedded in harm reduction, it was a way also to influence a bit the evolution of harm reduction field in France that now is also introducing a perspective of recovery in harm reduction. And that's something quite innovative for France that is very recent and that came to the conversations that I have with people with lived experience. So that's one of the topic. Another topic that came from a participatory-based research, that is a topic that is very less investigated, very few investigated in research, is, for example, the topic of violence. So we speak a lot about the topic of violence the violence of people who use drugs between each other, or the violence of people with lived experience towards professionals. But when we speak deeply with people with lived experience, we also see that these people experience a lot of violence, institutional violence by drug treatment providers, for example, but also violence from residents who can be very violent when they see people injecting in the streets, violence from politicians also who refused to disseminate harm reduction, who refuse sometimes in some settings to disseminate drug policies, the progressive drug policies. And for example, in the next years, I will work in a participatory-based manner on violence. And this topic came to my mind not by reading literature, but by having discussion with people with lived experience. So at the first level for me, it's very important for me to frame my research question by discussing with people with lived experience. And after that, what I try to do more and more is also to involve people with lived experience as researchers, as peer researchers in my team. So we will begin a research program on women who use cocaine crack. And we will we have a person in our team called Melissa, and she doesn't want until now to say the second name. So that's why I only say her birth name. So Melissa will be a peer researcher with us, and she will design. She will be responsible for doing the focus groups. And I think that it's very important to have her in the team, because women who use cocaine crack in France, that's the same in North America, are very have to face a lot of violence, a lot of difficulties, and to be sure that they will feel a respectful atmosphere in the research process, that's also very important to have a person who have a lived experience that is quite comparable to themselves, to build the trust with the research team. And another thing, so I'm very convinced that experiential knowledge is very important for informing research at the beginning of the process, and also in the middle of the process for collecting data and analyzing data. But there is also something very, very important is to give a feedback about our research to people with lived experience, to be sure that our research result will not only be accessible for scientists by publishing in journals, academic journals, but that's also very important to be sure that we present our results, research results, to people with lived experience who are the target of our research, to be sure that they will be able to benefit from our result, because research is also a world of power relationship. And I want to be as the other part of our social world, but that's also the case in research. And research is possible because people with lived experience accept to give time to us, to share with us their stories, their practices, to inform us. And So that's super, very, very important for me to be sure that what they give to me, I am able to give something back to them, and not to be a researcher that will only take something, but also a researcher that will be able to give something back. So that's why this the last part of a research process, when we disseminate our research, it's very important to have a close relationship with people with lived experience, yeah, to be sure that they will have access very rapidly to the research result, to, for example, also to be able to have access to new tools such as drug consumption rooms to improve their lives, or to have access to better access to stable housing, for example, or to different harm reduction or social inclusion tool that we evaluate. So yes, that's very important for me to involve people with lived experience in all the steps of the research process. That's a question of respect. That's a question of trust, and that's also a question of responsibility.
Marie, this has been a super fascinating conversation. I'm wondering if there's anything else you want to make sure our listeners hear from you.
Yes. So thank you for having this opportunity. As the podcast was a very pleasant experience, so thank you so much for inviting me, for having this conversation with you. I think that perhaps something important for me about evaluating drug consumption room is the fact that a lot of evaluation, until now, the evaluation of drug consumption room have been guided by government requests. So that's why the government want to be sure that drug consumption room will be effective on HIV and HCV transmission, or on public safety by reducing the injecting in public spaces. So now we have a lot of evidence on that. And we have designed our project based on government requests. And now I think that there is a new step to investigate that has also something to do with participatory-based research. So for the evaluation of drug consumption rooms, when I did the sociological part, I did a lot of semi-structured interviews with different stakeholders, people who attend the drug consumption room, but also harm reduction providers, residents, politicians. And during these sociological semi-structured interviews, it appeared that people who attend drug consumption room have the request to have a safe place to inject, but a lot of them have also the willingness to recover and to be able to manage their drug use. And but in their in a personal manner. So that doesn't mean recovery as abstinence, but recovery as managing drug use, to have a daily life that is better, not only reaching abstinence but decreasing, or yeah, having a more regulate relationship to drugs. So this topic of recovery appeared as being something important in the semi-structured interviews, and another topic that appeared to be very important was the psychiatric mental health and psychiatric comorbidities. And until now, these two topics, to my knowledge, have not been outcome in evaluation of drug consumption rooms, because the government were not interested in people's lives, if I may say that like that. They were more, unfortunately, interested in outcomes that were, yeah, public safety, public health at the community level, not at the individual level. And that's why in the new cohort that we will implement with my colleagues in the next weeks, the BIBOP cohort, that will continue the evaluation of drug consumption room. We decided to include new outcomes, such as recovery, mental health, and access to care, obviously, as new outcomes for evaluating also drug consumption rooms, because it was a request of people with lived experience. And that's a way to reconcile the goals of evaluating drug consumption rooms for informing the French government, as we did with COSINUS, and also a way to have with this new evaluation also new outcomes that were requested by people with lived experience, and that's something very, very important for me, to have this research that is also very attentive to, yeah, to the needs of people who vulnerable people. That's something very important.
Marie, thank you so much for being a guest with us today. I'm just going to briefly try to summarize some of the highlights of our conversation. And I'll start by acknowledging that you developed this study and considered the study design really with multiple stakeholders and multiple perspectives involved, including considering the political climate, as well as the scientific needs and the current state of research. And so it was in that context that you approached your evaluation of drug consumption rooms with a robust research design and a comparison group, which is novel in this body of literature. And I think particularly useful for many of our listeners who may be thinking about how do they design robust research and also within the practicalities that they face. So you and your team created a cohort that compared participants who accessed drug consumption rooms, which are available in two cities in France, and participants who had access to harm reduction centers, which are available throughout France. And you recognized from the beginning that there may be differences in these groups, and then used statistical modeling and other tools to account for that. You recruited over 600 individuals across four cities. Your main finding was quite remarkable, which was that there was a reduced rate of equipment sharing among participants who had access to drug consumption spaces. And as we talked about, baseline rates were between 17 and 18% in both groups, and these decreased to 1% of participants in cities where people have access to drug consumption spaces, as compared to 11% in cities where people do not have access. You know, the other thing that I really took from this conversation that I think is particularly important, excuse me, is the effects of having access to drug consumption spaces, not only on your primary outcome, but we also talked about the null outcomes of HCV and OAT access. However, that is in a context that I think is quite unique in France, where there really is widespread access to medications for opioid use disorder, widespread access to HCV treatment and testing, but also on participants' experience of feeling respected and engaged both in care and also, as you've discussed, in the research process. Finally, I really appreciate how you've left us with important questions about how do we incorporate voices of lived experience in our own work, and how you've and really provide a shining example of how you've done that over many, many years. I know from other conversations that you've done this with a very practical lens of both inclusion, but also recognizing that perfection is not necessarily the goal, and instead partnership is the goal. So with that, I think I'll leave us. And again, thank you so much for this opportunity and for joining us today.
Thank you so much. And see you soon, Honora and Raquel and Mark. I hope to see you in person in the future.
Yes. All right. Thank you so much, Marie.
Behind the Evidence is hosted by Honora Englander and Mark LaRochelle. Production by Raquel Silveira. Editing by Casey Calver. Music and cover art by Mary Tomanovich. Miriam Kumarami is the medical director of the Graykin Center for Addiction and co-editor-in-chief of AOD Health, together with David Filene. Learn more about AOD Health and subscribe for free at www.aodhealth.org. Behind the Evidence is supported by the Graykin Center for Addiction at Boston Medical Center. It is intended for educational purposes only and should not be considered medical advice. The views expressed here are our own and do not necessarily reflect those of our employers or the authors of the articles we review. All patient information has been modified to protect their identities.